Hi, my name is Sarah Tulloch, Talking Writing's podcast production manager, and this is the Talking Writing podcast. This is the first episode of the What We're Obsessed With Now series, a geek out session with Talking Writing's editors over the things they're, well, obsessed with, at least at the time of the recording. In this episode, before our summer break, the editors get into the weeds about technology and the digital tools they use or don't use day to day. Please enjoy the episode and subscribe to our paid Substack for bonus episodes.
We're talking about how either we're not using technology or, you know, how helpful is it, or how much we use or how little we use, or if we don't use anything at all. So yeah, maybe we'll start with you, Jess.
Okay.
That's what
I mean, I've got my Zoom, Google Meet, and my AirPod Pros, which my best friend gave me a while ago.
Wow.
Amazing. They're like, yeah, it's the noise canceling. I had no idea the difference until I tried them. And I was like, oh, now I understand why everyone's like, oh, these are much better, because they are. So like, that's what I use mostly. In the technology world, I'm not really like up on the latest. I still use an iPhone SE just because I'm comfortable with that size. I don't like a huge phone. I had to get a new phone a couple years ago when I left it on the roof of the car and it blew off when I drove off from the dog park. So that was fun. So I don't, and I've had other things fly off of the car that I've left on there. So I don't do that anymore. So that's, I'll just let you know if I can think of anything else, but that's what I've got for me right now.
No, but
now, what about, I was just going to ask, what about like music listening technology? Like, physical media versus streaming? I assume streaming?
A lot of streaming, but I started getting back into vinyl collecting in the last couple years, probably last 5 years. So I still need to set up my record player here, and I'm still using a stereo that my parents had in the 90s, but I have a better turntable hooked up to it now. I'm gonna need to get a new receiver, only two of the compact disc slots work still, and one of the cassette players works. So I'm still using that, but I do stream a lot, like when I'm working and stuff. But I really like the you know, the tangible vinyl, and like the, just, you know, it's kind of fun. You got to turn it over, you know, but it's like, right, more of a ritual kind of thing for me than just streaming, because it involves like actually going over, turning over the record and whatnot. So
nice.
I miss the sound systems where everything is there, like you have the cassette and the vinyl. And then when CDs came out, it had a CD player. I mean, why do you need like three separate things, you know? And like having a speaker so that you can hear the proper sound. And, you know, I never got the tinny speakers. Like, why that was, you know, portability, but also like, do you really want to experience music that way? And I'm not a purist in, you know, I'm not a music snob in any sense, but I just think that the experience of the sound is just so much better when it's like the proper speakers, you know, and what's the point of listening to it if it's not, maybe just sing or play in person rather than listen to a tinny speaker. I don't know. Yeah.
I've never gotten earbuds either. Like I'm not a fan of earbuds. Yeah, I've always been kind of a stickler for like large speakers and larger over the ear
headphones. Those are nice.
Headphones, yeah.
Those are nice. I kind of miss those.
Yeah.
I just got some new ones for Valentine's Day. I just pulled up the link. They're called the Bose Quiet Comfort Wireless Noise Canceling Headphones.
Are they great?
They're so great. I was like, okay, so to add to the noise canceling part of the conversation, I sometimes am still working when my boyfriend gets home and he plays video games and he's like talking in the chats and he's like, oh my God, they killed me. You guys gotta get better, God. And I'm like, these aren't noise canceling. Like the Bose ones are. So I like pulled him to the side and I held him by his shirt and I was like, I want noise canceling headphones so I don't hear you anymore. And he was like, okay. So these are like the best ones apparently, like that are out right now. Changed my entire life. I could be shot and I would never know because I did not hear anything. Like I can't hear a thing. And it's so like, because I get overwhelmed. And if there's like too many things happening, I want to listen to my video while I'm doing the dishes, but then the noise of everything and in the background, it's too much. So it just has me focus on this one sound of what I'm listening to. And I just feel so much calmer and so much like less anxious because I'm like, this is just my world. Finally, it's just me in here. So yeah, I definitely recommend those.
Nice. Yeah, I feel like I probably am blowing my ears out by like drowning the external world out with loud music in my headphones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, not everyone likes the earbuds. Like my dad can't use the earbuds because like his ears, it's just not comfortable for him.
Yeah.
But for me, it's fine. But I do love headphones as well. So that's good to know.
Yeah, it hurts my ears, the earbuds. And I mean, the noise canceling with this one is good, except that the really good noise canceling ones tend to be wired. You know, it's very hard to find wireless ones that are good. And so I want to try those Bose Comfort headphones.
Mine still came with a wire, but like the point of it is wirelessness. So
that's good.
It's still very powerful and it still really works.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually still have an iPhone 6S specifically because of the 1/8-inch jack, because all of my headphones are 1/8-inch jack.
That's right.
And I have like stayed on that just because I don't want to have to get new headphones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like they make it, you know, it's really planned obsolescence, right? So that's another cool term. I'm just kidding.
But like, you're right. Like I have an 10, I think, plus, and I'm noticing that it's slowed down like so much in the last like 4 months. I'm like shaking it. Like, can you work, please? And it's because they want me to buy the newest one. Like the 15 just came out. So
I also really have the 10 and I'm trying to make it last as much. I really don't like buying new gadgets.
Yeah.
There's something, I don't know if you guys feel this too. Like I get, you know how you want to hold on to your object because you feel like it's somehow melded into your personality or because you've used it so much.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly attached to it emotionally, but I feel like if I keep changing it, I feel like I've lost something. Even if all my data is stored somewhere and it's, you know, nothing is lost, but I feel something is lost and I don't quite know what that is. What are your thoughts on that?
Maybe a generational difference, you know? I don't know. It seems to me like that, I guess on the cusp of Gen X and millennial. And it seems to me like younger generations are more like cool with kind of picking up new things and just sort of moving from, that's just been my observation, but I can relate to that because I remember using my Walkman and then my Discman and my first iPod, but it always skipped. It was not, didn't work well for me. So, and I also tend to be a little clumsy with things like that. So I've had to replace things, but I do feel that way about like my phone, for example. Like if I leave it behind, it feels like some part of me is like missing, which isn't really great, but that's just how it is kind of because it has everything on there. So
I've been thinking about getting rid of my phone.
Yeah, a lot of people are, I've heard.
Just to get rid of that feeling of attachment, I guess. Because I feel like I don't update stuff a lot because I just get used to the usability of it, like just all the functioning. And I worry that like if I get something new, then I'll have to relearn. I'll just have to take like the extra time to relearn all the intricacies of it. So yeah, I feel like that's my main hesitancy to like getting new stuff.
Yeah, I actually have a friend, Paolo Garde, and 5 years ago he started not using a smartphone. He started using, you know, all the other alternatives left to the smartphone. I think he has it, you know, to if he has an app that he needs to use that only works on mobile, I think he'll access it in another way or like through his wife's phone or something. But he's been okay with the manual phone. I forgot what brand it is, but I'll share the link to Paolo Garde's YouTube channel. Basically, he's like, okay, how can I, you know, still live in the world with, you know, without using like, you know, extra technology that I don't need to use? Because at work, you have to, for work, you really have to use, you know, technology. Obviously, like we're using Zoom or, and now Whereby, because I feel like it's a good idea. And there's always this moment of like adjustment, right? Adjustment period. But yeah, but with work, what technologies, unique technologies do you all use for work? For example, like Jess for copy editing, John for music editing, Sarah for podcast editing. Like, what is the most essential technology that you use?
I use Google Docs a lot. And then I do work for the American College of Cardiology, so I use their system to edit questions. But then Microsoft Word is still huge for me, and Excel, PowerPoint too. And then for another client, they have this thing called Lionbox that they use. So like everything's pretty much, yeah, it's either like online or almost online. So like you can in real time, you know, you're not worrying about version control or anything. But even if I edit something in Lionbox, I need to also just save it with my initials just so I'm not confusing people. So I feel like that's still like valuable to do because we don't want to get people confused. So that's about it for me, though. I'm a copy editor, so it's all like, you know, word based, basically.
Yeah, but isn't it kind of it's mind boggling that there's no other word processing software. Yeah, it's just Word.
Yeah, it's really interesting, actually.
Yeah, even Google Docs, right? I'm a developmental editor. A lot of my macros, I can't put it on Google Docs.
No, they won't translate.
I still have to do Microsoft Word. I have to do it all in Microsoft Word and then upload it.
Yep.
On Google Docs, then it'll translate, but not the other way around.
Yeah, it's weird. I found that to be true, and they still haven't updated it, which just seems really kind of weird.
Yeah, Google seems to be like, they're like leaving stuff, right? They're leaving stuff undone. But it's just annoying that there aren't any other word processing. No one's investing in word processing software. But it's so essential in editing. I know there's like Perfect It, but I find that it's clunkier. You know, you have to train Perfect It so that it like will do what you need it to do. And for me, I'll just like stick to Word and the macros. Then, you know, I'm not gonna use another software that I need to train before it does what I need it to do. So yeah, I guess that's my wish list, like a better, like more intuitive, like word processing software out there for editing. Yeah.
I also have that wish list because I don't know if anyone else has heard this, it's kind of gone under the radar, but Google Docs said that, or Google in general, said that they are going to start like scanning like Google Docs and like whatever you make in Google, and they own it now. So people, like a lot of writers that I follow for like writing books, they're like, they could, what does this mean? Are they going to go to the extent of scanning my entire book and publishing it and like making movies off of it before I can get it to a publisher? So me and like my writing community are trying to find like new places to write on. I've moved everything over to Notion just because I have a Notion account, but I'm like, what about like my cut, like my clients, like what about, like, are you going to scan all these podcast information and then like make a million podcasts basis of like what everyone has? Like, I'm looking to see like what is shareable and like still useful and everything, because it's like that episode of Black Mirror, like that one where like someone is terrible. I forget her name. And like they scan her entire life because she's like checked yes on the terms and conditions like 2 years ago. I'm like, I never read the terms and conditions.
Yeah,
like,
of course
you read this.
I know. That's, I mean, come on, government, do your job.
Yeah, like, this needs to be regulated.
This is where you need to intervene.
Yeah. So if anyone who's listening can like put it in the Substack comments or whatever, like what they're using, because I'm just going to have to offload Google in like general, because if you're going to do that, I'm leaving, you know?
Google has some problems anyway. So yeah. I hear that.
Well, yeah, or I guess like even getting the more clear information on the reach that's possible, you know, like what does that exactly mean?
Exactly. Like
I'm pretty sure it's absolute.
Yeah.
That's what they do. They just reach as much as they can. And then if they get slapped on the wrist, then okay, they'll pull back. But, you know, they're like, we'll do the damage first.
Exactly.
And then we'll ask questions later.
That's, I think, a big problem is that people in the government, like a lot of them don't understand a lot of technology. Mm-hmm. So it's like by the time they get around to like even understanding it enough to know that this is like an overreach, then like technology is exponentially just changing, you know, and growing. So like by the time they get to this problem, then there's this whole other thing that's growing in the background as well. So.
And that's why we need younger people.
Yeah.
But it's also like, I mean, I feel like that happens in finance and in business too, where people build loopholes into like in very complicated, wordy ways that go undetected because they're hidden in like, you know, 1,000-page files that they're expecting nobody to actually go thoroughly through. Mm-hmm. And they just hide them there and then hope that they don't get discovered until you know they've profited off of it enough to like make it worthwhile.
It's both fronts, you know. Mm-hmm. So legal, what it does is it preserves the institution, right? Preserves the status quo that is only benefiting very few, even if it should be technically illegal, but you know, they can do it legally. So they protect that. Technology, on the other hand, finds new ways to kind of screw everyone over. And so it's like in both fronts. So you're right. It's like two sides of the same coin. And so technology will always be couched around that because it's protected by, you know, they're good at protecting themselves legally. And at the same time, they're also good at like exploring, pushing boundaries in a not so positive way. Like it'll be positive, and then they're going to take it to a place where I guess it's a function of greed. It's a function of seeing how else they can get more and more. And sometimes more is not better. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, and they think that it's never going to affect them. Like, I saw someone was like, I'm angry about this and we got to do, like, we have to hit them back. And somebody suggested, like, using the AI picture, whatever, to make, like, compromising, not, like, so bad, but, like, bad-looking images of political figures who could do something to stop, like, AI, like, senators and representatives, you know, and it'd be like, oh, well, Senator so-and-so pooped outside, and then that would get their attention of, like, what? They made an image about me, and then they would pass some sort of, like, legislation, you know, but it kind of feels like they think that it's never going to affect them, so they'll never do anything. But it is going to affect us probably for the rest of our lives, for the rest of humanity, if we continue having AI situations, you know?
Well, and if we continue to intentionally screw people over, as long as there are elements out there that are intentionally trying to screw a lot of people over, and, you know, and there's no check on that.
And so so this is not exactly a tangent to our topic, because I was going to bring up that I, you know, as a freelancer, you know, I also have a lot of software in like managing my projects. So I have online CRMs, you know, the popular ones are Dubsado. I use Bloom. And it's so essential for me because it automates a lot of things. So I don't have to hire like somebody else to do my invoices, to do the quotes, you know, to the contracts, blah, blah, blah. It automatically generates those processes so I can get to the work that I like to do, like editing, you know, the editing proper. But lately I've been thinking about all of these issues and how we don't own anything anymore that either we create online, music, writing, even our projects, you know, if it all crashed today, I won't have records of, you know, from my business. And so that has been bothering me a lot. So the last few months, I've been moving away from a more online way of managing my projects to like a more manual, but still manageable way to do it. So I canceled my Bloom CRM, even though I liked it. I downloaded all of my data there and I started using Notion, you know, and I know right now it's good. I don't know how long that's going to last because once they go public, I feel like every time an app goes public, it's like all bets are off. Mm-hmm. But right now, at least that's downloadable and it's not all online. So if it crashed, I still have records of my stuff. And so for you, like John, your music, for example, what are you using so that it's not all dependent online? Like, how do you store your music?
Yeah, so with music and video, I feel like the files are too big. I feel like there's a pretty big discrepancy between like text-based stuff and audio and video, specifically like text-based being the smallest, video being a little bit bigger, or sorry, audio being a little bit bigger, but not crazy, and then video being like insane. Like I have, like my weird music video file, I think is like 500 gigs or something like that. So it's like, you know, so I have like a seven terabyte hard drive and like a 5 terabyte hard drive. I have a terabyte hard drive and a 5 terabyte hard drive that are all full. And then I just got a 7 terabyte hard drive to start to move forward. So, you know, but yeah, that's just, it makes it a lot harder to have those things hosted online. So I have all of those hosted physically. Now all of weird music, up until, you know, right now it's February, up until this past Christmas, I actually was doing all of my recording on an old 2009 Mac Mini that was running an old operating system because I had a free copy of Logic Pro from 2009 that didn't work on operating systems past a certain point. So I had an intentionally old computer just because I had a free copy of the software. And then just for Christmas this past year, my brother and my dad were getting rid of computers. So I upgraded to a new Mac Mini from 2020. And also got like a legitimate version of Logic Pro, the newest, you know, the new current one. So, you know, so I've just leaped from like being like 15 years in the past to being like 5 to 10 years in the past. But, you know, to me, it's kind of funny because I feel like when, especially with music and art and writing, like obviously people have been making beautiful works of art for hundreds of years, you know, when the technology wasn't there, and you know, with movies for like the past 100 years, and to me, it's like kind of funny when people are like complaining about like, oh, you know, I've got this like 2000, you know, I've got this 10-year-old computer and the render times are so like slow and like the trend and or like the bouncing times. And but if you think about it in the past, it's like you used to have to send that away and then like have it developed and then like get the reels back and then try to do an edit, and if that edit didn't work out like you wanted it to, send it back and get it redone. You know, that could take like days, weeks, months, you know, instead of like a few seconds or like a few minutes. Like now waiting 5 minutes for something to process is like unbearable, you know. So yeah, I mean, I think there's a certain amount of creeping expectation that is a little bit not logical or not unnecessary. I think it's like a little bit unnecessary that we need to have things as fast as possible, because again, people were doing this before this technology was available and doing it just fine. Like people didn't have a tangibly worse quality of life like 30 years ago in the 90s than they do now, you know? So yeah, I mean, I think there is like a certain amount of like just the psychological aspect of knowing that you can make do with stuff that is a little bit older, you know? I mean, if you needed to, you could go back to Mead notebooks and typewriters, you know.
I still write on notebooks, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So right now in terms of my programs, I'm using a current version of Logic Pro, and then I use Photoshop and Premiere for my photo and video editing. I've only just in the past couple months gotten to the point where like I have computers that are somewhat able to keep up with it. Like my Premiere, like I was using a really old Mac Mini, and then I got like a 2010 iMac, and that was like a huge improvement. And now I've got like a 2015 iMac, and that's like even more of an improvement, but I was still doing it with the old technology. And then my live music setup is ridiculous. I use like 2 DVD players, a projector, and then like all sorts of, like I even have a computer that just runs some sounds, just like a few. And when I played one of my last shows, people were like, oh, how did you get like all these video feeds synced up? And I was like, oh, I just, you know, had a count off at the beginning, and I press play and then pause it on the count of three and then pause it on the count of four. And then I press master and then I unpause it on three and four, and that syncs up all the videos. And they were like, so you weren't using the computer for that? You were using, I was like, no, I was just using the computer for like these three sounds that I needed. And they were like, oh, so you're basically doing like the 70s, like tape loop stuff that people used to do. And I was like, yeah. So yeah, I mean, you know, you can make it work. And part of this is also I sort of live like a life of hand-me-downs. So like all of this stuff is like free and collected and trash picked a lot of the time. Like my DVD players and my TVs are all trash picked. So, you know, it's just a way to like keep it cheap and try to figure out what you can do with like the junk in your basement instead of like getting a new program or a new device. So yeah, that's kind of how I've been technologically surviving over the past 10 years.
That's amazing. And Sarah, do you use like, do you still use Photoshop and Premiere, or what do you use to edit podcasts?
I mean, I use Descript for pretty much everything. I feel like it has everything in there. For like the social media materials, I'll use Canva. That has everything. But I heard that Adobe just released its competition for Canva. I'm forgetting the name. I just heard it this morning. But Adobe was hating on Canva for like so long because everyone was switching to Canva because of how useful it is. And now they have their own thing. And it's like, okay, have you solved the reason why people are leaving Adobe in general? Like, it's so expensive, it's limited, like is it the same? And people are like, it's like the same interface. Like everything that you've seen on Canva is copy pasted into Adobe. So it's like, what's gonna happen? But
but you know, so the I when Canva began, because she's a Filipino Australian founder, Melanie. Yeah. She's a really brilliant programmer, you know, but design wise she was limited. You know, and that's how the idea for Canva came out. She's like, she has no aspirations to be this brilliant designer, but she just needs to do certain things.
Yeah.
And so Canva is like the simplest, it's almost like cut paste if without the scissors, mm-hmm. you know, it doesn't have any aspirations to be like high art or like the cutting edge of graphic design. So I think the beauty and the advantage of Canva is that it knows exactly mm-hmm. what it is and what it wants and doesn't reach for things that is not in its wheelhouse. And so it never aspired to be Photoshop or Illustrator. Obviously, like, designers still need to use those professional tools because Canva will not give that to them, right?
Yeah.
They will not have those functionality. So I think that's why people kind of recognize that. And so it's like, yeah, I just need this. I don't need to be like, I'm not gunning for a design award, you know? So I'll just use Canva because I just need a simple graphic for my social media or something. So I think
I use Canva a lot for that mm-hmm. reason, because I did learn how to base like the basics of Photoshop, but that was like 15 years ago. and I haven't had to use it since. But then when I wanted to do some stuff for my social media, it was just like easier to use Canva than have to go through all that learning, relearning again. And probably totally different program now than it was then. So yeah,
I will say so one thing that I do with Photoshop a lot has been to like select like an object in a picture, which used to be like this magic wand tool that you would like you know, it was pretty specific to whatever colors, like it wasn't trained as well as what they have now. And now that I've upgraded all my computers, it also upgraded the version of Photoshop that I'm using. And the new one is so much better. Like it gives you like the pink outline of like the object that you want to select. And it's so much more accurate than it used to be, which I love. I actually, and you know, for me, like the Canva versus Photoshop thing, I have never gotten into like the aesthetic of Canva. So like I always go to Photoshop just because I like to have more control, I guess. But it, again, like what you're saying, it's like if like Adobe should recognize that people like me are their target audience, you know, and people like who aren't looking for in-depth editing or like making strange art, you know, will gravitate towards Canva because it totally like fits the bit, it totally like does the job for simple design purposes, you know.
Exactly. Like not everything needs to be elevated, and at the same time you can't shortcut really good design, you know. So so I think it's bonkers that Photoshop is trying to be Canva. It's like, don't, you know, maybe just like do more stuff for your target audience and what they need, understand what they need better rather than try to copy, you know. And again, I'm thinking these decisions are made by like not developers or not the founders, but like the shareholders who want more money right now.
You know? Well, and there's this like obsession with like losing like an audience, like, oh, we're losing all these customers to this other thing, so we have to like gain that audience back. And it's like, well, you know, you can look at it that way, or you can dig deeper into like the audience that you do have and start gearing everything more towards the people that are going to, you know, be using that.
It's like a 2-year-old, you know, it's like, you can't have everything. Why not? you know. Right. Like, why can't I have everything? You know, it's so funny.
It's because you're already filthy rich and it's gross.
So, okay. So any technology that we admire, like we're like, yeah, we're rooting for this technology. Is there anything that comes to mind?
The printing press.
Love it.
The cotton gin.
No, I'm in love with letterpress for sure. I you know, my poetry book is done on letterpress. I'm just in love with that. I just wish the learning curve wasn't so hard. So I just like rely on people who, and also the cost of owning a letterpress. But yeah, like older printing techniques, I think, yeah, there's a place for them, I think, even in our very technology dependent world. But what about like technology, like, I mean, modern technology wise, like apps, are there apps that we're rooting for? Or we think
I use Dailyo. It's DAYLIO. And I use that for journaling at night. It has a lot of, even the free version has a lot of options. You can like fill out if you exercised or like if you did any social things, and like, so you can kind of keep track of that, which can be helpful. Cause, if you deal with like seasonal depression, which I do sometimes, it's helpful to know like what I did that day. Like I could look at patterns kind of. So I did have the premium for a while, but I just have the free version now, but it's, even that has a lot of, I like it as a journaling app, but that's as far as any other apps, that's just a personal use kind of thing. I don't even know what other apps I have on my phone. I have a bunch, but I have to look.
I think it's funny the trend of like Calm or like the meditation apps. Like I think it's a funny trend to like combat, because I've taken all my social media off of my phone, including my email, because I found myself like checking it obsessively. So I took it off. But yeah, I think it's just a funny way to combat that is like, oh, well, now there's this new app to calm you down from all the stress that you're incurring from like the bombardment of technology.
I like Insight Timer a lot if we're talking about like meditation apps.
Insight Timer, yeah.
10 years now.
And yes.
It's great. But yeah, so I start, and it's free too, which is really nice because the Calm is only free for a certain, up to a certain point, and then it starts hounding you for like to subscribe and all that. So I prefer Insight Timer myself.
Not everything needs a subscription. I hate that trend right now.
You have, you know, it's so annoying after a while.
Yeah.
I just cut down all of my subscription costs in half because, you know, it adds up. It's like, oh, $3 here and whatever. It adds up to so much. So I'm a fan of the apps that are free. So yeah, Insight Timer, you know, unpaywalled news sites. Come on, news sites. Anyway, yeah, I'm preaching to the choir here.
Yeah. I actually have been writing everything in notes. So in terms of like writing, like I used to do OpenOffice, and then when I upgraded my, like I just didn't re-download it when I got new computers and stuff like that. And so I don't want to pay for Microsoft Word. I've just ended up using Notes, and you know, I don't even use Google Docs that much unless it's like I need to share it. But yeah, I just thought that was like a funny adjunct to like the text-based conversation.
Yeah, I use Notes a lot too, because you can access it both on your phone and on your desktop. So Notes is how I do my brain dump.
Yeah, I also use Notes. I'll like text myself as well. If I have like an idea out of nowhere and I need to like find it somewhere eventually, like I'll just like search my text and I'll be like, oh, okay, that's what that was. But the app that I love right now is the Libby app. It's like for the library.
The library, yeah.
Yeah, I got a library card for free online. Like, you can just have the information immediately.
Yes.
And I started like downloading all these books, especially since I'm going on vacation soon. So I just have these, and I have like a million. Oh, this is the one. We need to talk about this lady.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Giselle is, email you.
Because I was waiting for the hold, and I just got it. I was like, oh, my God, I got to tell them. So that was that.
It's amazing.
But, yeah.
I mean, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that you can, like, have 10 books at a time. They automatically get sent back after, like, 14 days, like, 2 weeks. So you don't have any, like, fees or anything, like late fees. And I am holding all these books from, like, I've seen on TikTok and what people recommend me, and whenever it's ready, they're like, okay, it's ready, do you want it? And I'll be like, yes. And they're like, you're like next in line, you're sixth in line. I have an Emily Henry book, and it's like 12 weeks, and it's like I'm 66th in line. I'm like, I'm just gonna buy this one, see whatever. But yeah, I've read a lot of books for free recently, and I'm like obsessed. So yeah.
God bless the library. God bless the library, really.
And it's so funny to me that that never enters into the conversation of like paying for like streaming or like other things that are like, you know, cutting out the artist's income. Like, nobody's gonna shit on the library. Like, the library is the best, you know?
No.
And yeah, I use the library all the time. Like, it's like one of my favorite ways to I mean, I just wrote that whole essay about the public library university because I'm a big fan, and I don't think that anybody would count that into the entities that are like adding to the negative impact of like making everything free.
Yeah.
But it is, and to me, a good way.
Well, it counts as a purchase, so the author actually gets royalties.
Nice.
There's a certain amount of borrowing, and then the author still gets royalties from that. So I say, if your budget doesn't, you know, you can't afford but to buy books, borrow it from the library. It helps the author. It counts towards their royalties. So, yeah, little known fact.
Very nice.
I'm liking StoryGraph because I like tracking. It encourages me to read more when I have to track what I'm reading. So StoryGraph for me is like a good alternative to Goodreads. It's also free. There's a paid version, but the free version is just as good. So I like that. And the founders are, so it's Black woman owned. They are two co-founders. And what I like about it is when you go to their website, you can participate in the development of the app. They show like what the progress is, what is in development, what features are coming up, and you can comment on it. And you can make a request for a feature. It's just such a simple, but like, you know, it does a lot to the experience. You know what's coming up, and then you can, you know, also request and everything. So yeah, I like that.
That's really cool, especially since Goodreads is owned by Amazon, and like the interface is getting worse, I'm hearing. So
yeah, it's being gamed by a lot of marketers. It's mm-hmm. being gamed, so the reviews are not even genuine anymore.
Really?
Yeah, like, well, there's the review bombing episode, right? But also, like, because it's part of publisher marketing now, mm-hmm. you know, so many PR firms are, you know, you don't know which reviews have been generated by, you know, paid reviewers who work with the PR firms like Kirkus and all of that.
Yeah.
Or which ones are like from real readers. And so, yeah, I've had an experience like that before with a book. What is this? What's that? Wayward? No, it's a popular novel. I'm going to say Wayward, but that's not exactly the title of the novel, but it's popular, and I started reading it and I could not finish it. I didn't
really. You DNF'd it?
Yeah, I DNF'd it because
is it by Dana Spiata?
It's
a pink cover.
It's like the cover is with a curl, like it has a curl on the cover.
No, I'll keep looking.
Anyway, and all the reviews were like so good, and I'm like, really? What? I just felt so betrayed. And so like, well, yeah, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, you know, it's always, I find myself often out of line with reviewers or with like consensus reviews.
Yeah.
Like even going back to, I remember watching Face Off, the movie.
John Travolta.
John Travolta and Nicolas Cage. And my brother and I like laughed through the whole thing. We were like making fun of it and just like, oh my God, what a ridiculous movie. And then like went home and looked at like our papers, basically like the Metacritic type of, you know, they had like all the reviewers of all the major papers, and like everybody gave it like 3.5 to 4 stars. And I was like, this movie was awful. Like,
well, at least it's 3.5 stars and not 5 stars, right?
Oh, this is out of 4.
Oh, out of 4. Oh my God. Yeah. Okay. No.
Yeah, everything was like everybody gave it a good review. It's like nobody panned it. And I was like, how did nobody pan this movie? It's like,
maybe they saved it for later. Right. They like keep it away until later when it's made the box office or something. Oh.
You can also control reviews but just by reviews. What I learned from working at a music magazine is that like favorable and disfavorable reviews depend on like basically the editor has the control to be like, I want this writer who likes it, or I want this writer who doesn't like it. And a lot of times in the magazine that I worked for, there was a direct relationship between like the editor's taste, personal taste, combined with who's buying ad space in our magazine. Like, we can't give them a bad review because we have ad space, which is like classic journalism ethics, you know, going against journalism ethics. But like, that was an everyday practice. It's like, you don't want to bite the hand that feeds you. So like, yeah, I mean, there are a lot of reasons why you could probably get a lot of people on board to get behind a movie and manufacture. Yeah. Like, and it doesn't even mean that each individual review is inauthentic. It just means you're picking the people who like it instead of picking the people who don't like it, and that's who gets printed. You know,
I think
so. There can be a manufacturing of that.
Completely right. The more institutional the publication is, right, the more manufactured it is. And I think that's why I like looking at book talks now, like on Instagram and TikTok, because it's like a more visceral review, and so you can tell that it's like, you can tell who is doing it for PR and who's reviewing it authentically. And so it's I think a better gauge. Although really I base what I read on like the synopsis, right? And I look at the author too, because unfortunately now I feel like I have to research the author really well, because I just don't want to waste time reading somebody that I don't want to support. And unfortunately, and unfortunately, technology helps us do that. Whereas before, whatever, we don't know the background of that author. We'll never know, like, you know, too much about the author. So I don't know, like, do you think that's a good thing and a bad thing now, that, or is it a good thing or a bad thing that we can like research the artists and writers that we like?
I think so, because I think that it's like, I don't want to get eaten up in the comments, but there's an author that I love who I'm going to name. Her name is Sarah J. Maas, and she is all over BookTok. She's like the darling of publishing right now. She revolutionized romanticy, and she has had some problematic things in real life and then things also that were in her book. And I'm like, I'm reading her books without have knowing her. Like, I didn't research her before. I was in college still. And I was like, that I feel like was a choice. And I don't know if I agreed with this choice. Like, so then I go through the whole thing and then it comes up again on Book Talk years later. And she is just like, arguably is racist, especially with what she read, especially with what she wrote. My biggest problem that I felt like was a glaring red flag was the fridging that she did to it's romanticy, but it was like an Indian coded woman. She was an Indian coded woman. And fridging is when you like kill a woman so that the main character has like motivation to like be the good guy or whatever. And it was so unnecessary. She was such like an amazing character and you just kill her, and bad killing. It was torture. It was everything. It was bad. And I was like, what happened here? What just happened? And if you do have racial biases, I could see how in her mind that made sense, but like that it's still racist at the end of the day, you know? So yeah, there's a lot. And I feel like knowing about that, even if it was years later, it made sense to my reading experience. I was like, oh, this is why this happened, you know? So I appreciate like being able to research everybody, because I think it's important to I think it adds context. Even if you try to separate your own art from yourself as an artist, is like you do influence what you make. So yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm of, you know, I feel like this kind of bleeds into the whole argument of like, can you like somebody's artwork and not like the person? And I have been, yeah, I've been getting more and more into like, if I don't like the person, it starts to affect the way I think about their art.
Yeah.
To me, it's the same way that if you find somebody attractive when you first see them and then you meet them and like their personality is off, and then they like actually start to look less physically attractive, you know? Yeah. It's sort of like that. And the opposite can be true also. If like you don't necessarily think somebody's attractive at first, and then like they grow on you and on a personality level, then like that increases. And to me, the same applies to like whether you like somebody's artwork. I mean, like I was a huge Louis C.K. fan before.
Oh man, same
the incident. Yeah, you know. Geez. And then after the incident, I tried to like revisit his work, and it all felt gross to me. like all of a sudden, like everything that I thought was funny like started to take on a really like dark and sort of like gross feeling to it. And also, I guess I was like, when I was into it, I was single, you know, it's like a single dude with no kids. And then like after I got married and had a kid, I was like, now I like straight up disagree with everything you're saying, like all the negativity towards his like wife and towards his kids. I was like, but I really love my wife and I love my kid. Like,
yeah.
I don't agree with this anymore. Yeah. You know? And then the on top of that, the scandal aspect of it just made like, yeah, it just made everything like really distasteful to me. And so I think that I think that like, yeah, how you see a person as a person can and should influence like how you feel about their artwork.
I think it's more about we're human beings first, you know, and artists second. Like, I don't, you know, being an artist is a part of us being human, but it doesn't encompass our full humanity, no matter how passionate we, you know. So we can't erase the human from the art. And it's just like, oh, you know, how many geniuses have we ratioed and whatever? Who cares if they were geniuses, if they, you know, harmed so many people? You know, Woody Allen is another example. It's like
also allowing people to be terrible because you consider them a genius. Like, oh, they're this artistic genius, therefore we will let all this slide. Yeah. Is not good.
It's like, especially in like this country, because I watch a storyteller, but like an internet historian who like covers a lot of like Chinese news and like pop culture and things like that. So she is saying that, like, in China, if you have a scandal bad enough, you get deleted. Like, all of your TV shows are deleted. You can't find them anywhere. Your music is wiped. Like, you cannot be found anywhere.
They're always extreme there.
I'm like, whoa, like, deleted. Like, there's a word for it that she used, but, like, you're blacklisted, you're deleted, you're gone. Like, that's it. And I'm thinking, I'm like, people in the US think that, like, cancel culture is, like, such a thing right now. And it's like, but their work is still listened to. It's still watched. Yeah. It's still applicable. Like, it's just that this person socially is an asshole, you know? So that's not, their work does not take away that part of them, compared especially to in another country where you get deleted. Like,
literally.
Right. Yeah.
Wow. Like, all history wiped.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't get the argument that, but the work, but the art is like, yeah, the human is part of the art, you know, because otherwise the standard is super arbitrary and it's not a standard at all if, you know, mm-hmm. if you remove the context, mm-hmm. you know, there's always context.
Well, and all of these are subjective. I mean, whether you find a personality trait distasteful or whether you like or dislike somebody's art, all of that is subjective. So it's all up to the person. But, you know, to me, it's all like affinity and resonance. It's like you got to find the artist that you resonate with, like, aesthetically and personally, and stay away from those that you don't.
Yeah. So we are not doing such a good job at recommending so much technology, but we're just being honest about what we use and what we don't use. And I feel like we represent a lot more people, you know, like we want to think that we are in a world where, like, oh, everyone just pushes a button or, like, the apps do everything for us. But I think real life is still very much physical and manual, and beautiful that way.
And technology is not as automatic as that. Like, technology yes. needs to be learned, and technology needs to be coached in order to have to output what you want it to output. And I think that's an important distinction to make, because, you know, no matter what, you still have to, like, finesse the way you use it.
I agree. Anything else we want to say about technology before we close out?
I was just thinking, like, to go off what you said, like, it is a tool. There's not a lot of done for you perfectly, like, apps or technology out there. Like, it's still something that we have to work through. And I think that once that is, like, the baseline of, like, your understanding of technology, then things become a little, like, easier to, like, wrap your head around mentally. So yeah, I would still say that technology is still a tool. It's like all these new apps and programs, you still have to have, like, human interface, like, with it. So yeah, exactly. We're not at done for you yet.
Yeah, it's like a hammer.
Yeah, it exactly.
Seems simple to use, but believe me, it's not so easy to hit that nail when you first use the hammer.
Yeah, and hitting your fingers is a very real danger.
Yeah. So yeah, thank you everyone for participating in this conversation, and all of our recommendations will be in the newsletter. So let us know what you think.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Writing Podcast. We're an independent literary site and nonprofit organization based in the Boston area, but with contributors from around the world. Since our founding in 2010, we've relied on donations to keep publishing and podcasting. To donate to TW, you can use the donate button on the rss.com page of this podcast or visit talkingwriting.com/donate. And of course, feel free to drop us a line at editor@talkingwriting.com.